Due to its length, this episode of Beyond Reality Paranormal was divided into two segments. This is the second of the two.
The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Hey everybody, JV here. This is, of course, the second part of our two-part interview with Caroline Corey. Caroline is a filmmaker. She has a new film out called Superhuman, and it discusses a variety of psychic-type phenomena that seem to be innate in all of us. And the first part of the interview is fascinating. If you haven't listened to that yet, I recommend you do before you listen to the second part here. But after the break, we will continue with the second part of our interview with Caroline Corey on Beyond Reality.
Please support the program. Go to patreon.com/Johaw. That's J-O-H-A-W.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Tonight is very fascinating as we continue to talk about Superhuman, The Invisible Made Visible, a new documentary coming out very shortly, although pre-orders are available. Caroline Corey is the filmmaker. And Caroline, you hit on something before we went to break. We were talking about the water, the pH experiment with water, and you brought up the point that if you can use intention to alter water, to alter the pH of water, and obviously the body is made up, what's the figure, 97% water, whatever it is, but you can have the same effect on your body. Intention can affect your body. This opens the door to a whole bunch of very interesting ideas as it relates to human health. Let's talk about that.
Yes, absolutely. That's the reason why I wanted to demonstrate this experiment to show that it's very, very possible. Here's the measurement. We start out at 7.4 and we want to lower it, or vice versa. It's at, usually people are acidic, so it's usually the other way around.
Yeah.
And by focusing this way, you know, it just starts going up and up and up. I mean, and like I said, people have to realize this was scientifically done. I mean, we take the baseline for a while. It's not the fluke. And, of course, we repeat it over and over. But we're making a film, so obviously we have to edit it down. And so, so it's huge. Think about this. So instead of having to purchase, for example, water in a bottle to raise the water in your body, you can think of it changing, and it does. So, of course, it takes a little bit of training. You know, it's like you have to know how to focus, first of all, you have to believe that that's possible. And, in fact, that's why we did it in the film, to make people, kind of feel confident that, hey, try it. Just try it and see what happens, you know. So the only thing, difficulty, I would say that it's difficult to maybe measure the pH inside your body yourself. You know, there's like those little strips that you can try to use, mm-hmm. and see if it changes. There's all kinds of things that you could use maybe to try to do that.
If we have the ability to affect our health and affect the makeup of our body with intention, why is that something that, along with all these other ideas, seems to be a bit recessed for most people? It's not something that we actually innately know how to access. At least we're not aware that we can, if we are in fact doing that. It seems like that's something that would have risen to the forefront of our species if it's something that we can do that has such a powerful effect.
You would think so, right? But that's what I call human manipulation. That's what I call mind, programming. We are programmed to think, first of all, that we're not good enough. We're programmed to think that we need something outside ourselves to heal or to help us. So the reflex, actually, again, I've been working with so many people over 20 years from all over the world, help them through health issues, all kinds of issues. And so the first thing that comes up as you're trying to heal is, I can't do it on my own. Like, I need always something, a drug or something, because I'm not good enough. That's part of the separation program of the human brain, unfortunately. So I think because of that, and then one generation after another, you end up with a species that stops believing, you know, and relies on, you know, the big pharma and things like that to heal itself. But I think it's, I think now there's more and more people starting to realize, like, wait, I can do this. I don't know how, but I know I can do this. There's a part of me, you know, deep inside that knows this is possible. So I'm hoping that this film will kind of empower people to go there.
And if we take this a step further, there's nothing more important to human health than human DNA. And you actually did some experiments with DNA as well.
Yeah, actually, that's how I started out. I started doing these experiments with DNA before water, and this was fascinating, by the way. And as I'm doing all these experiments, what you know, you start to kind of notice that when you focus your intent on water or on DNA, it behaves very differently than focusing on a piece of paper. It's very fascinating. It's like the DNA especially responds very quickly. It's like you tell it, I want this, and it just does it. It almost does it before you even finish your thought. Whereas like a piece of paper, it almost like has an ego of its own. It's you say, okay, I want you to rotate, and it's more like the reaction is like, well, maybe I don't want to right now. It's a very weird dynamic. Anyway, going back to the DNA, because it had such a quick, fast response, I started working with it a lot, and I noticed consistently when you focus on DNA, it responds according to your intent, and your intent is to repair, is to self-repair, because the DNA can self-repair. And so, and it does that by raising the electrical conductivity through the DNA sample. And so there are studies made about that, basically the electricity going through the DNA sample. When it's higher, it shifts the rotation of the DNA, which starts to self-correct. They've done a study on that, and every time it showed that it would start to self-repair. And so that's the reason why raising the electrical conductivity through the DNA is very important. You're basically self-correcting. You're basically self-healing yourself. And so, and all that I've done is just focus my intention, and literally within seconds, the DNA would respond. So that's crazy. I mean, can you imagine that you would just, like, focus on your DNA and then through your intention, knowing that within seconds it just responds to your intention? So why not try it? Why not, you know, go for it? That was the point of this this demonstration, again, which we've done many, many, many times over, and it works every single time. And I'm not the only one, again. I would invite other people to try it, and it would be like zap, you know, yeah, and DNA would respond.
And again, one of the beautiful things about this documentary, Superhuman, is that you show this. You show the experiments in progress and in process, and you show the results. So people, you know, can see it happening in front of their eyes. Not that you can actually see the DNA altering, but you can see the results. You know, a lot of times we're just shown results, and we're supposed to take it on faith that the experiment was done properly. I want to address another part of, I guess we would call it human physiology that relates to this discussion. And that's the idea, and I hope I have this right, it's sonocytology. Did I say that right?
And we're sonocytology. I love that.
And we're talking about the basically the audio, the sound based through vibrations that our cells make. And the fact that they make a different sound, and we'll call it music for lack of a better word. They make a different music when they're healthy versus when they're sick versus when they're dying, right?
Yes, exactly. I love your questions, by the way, JV. It's like so profound because a lot of people don't pick up on these little things, you know, in the film. But anyway, so this is an amazing professor, UCLA professor, that discovered that he was working on yeast cells, and he discovered that depending on what the cell was doing, it was emitting a different vibration and a different sound. So, of course, using technology, he was able to kind of make that sound audible so you can actually hear it. So the bottom line is that different, like you were saying, different states of the cell emit different sounds. So think about that. You don't hear it, but you're actually emitting a sound. And that is, again, validation that you are emitting a frequency. And when the cell is deceased, actually, it's emitting a very weird, distorted frequency. In the film, we play the frequency sound of the cell, of the actual cell. This is not just any sound. This is a real sound coming out of a cell. So people can hear what it's like when you are healthy, when your cells are vibrating in a healthy way, the sound that you make, and when you're not healthy, the sound that your cells are making. It's fascinating, and it's also validation that you are vibrating at different rates at different times.
We have one of our chatters in our chat room who has a question, and this particular chatter actually has her own YouTube channel, and she addresses topics that are far beyond my comprehension in a lot of ways. So the question is a little bit that way, too, but I'm going to read it word for word for you. Water is based on particulate matter in the air, making contaminated from fracking, from CO2, nitrates, methane variations. I'm trying to read this. Actually, I'm not sure I'm reading it correctly. The Vostok ice core time interval, 137,000 years ago, how can we use intent to actually help clean water? Can we do that?
Ah, yes. Well, actually, I love this question, too. So what happened was we were also trying to decide before starting an experiment, well, what kind of water do you use? You know, like, do you use distilled water? Do you use, like, tap water? Do you use bottled water, spring water? Because it makes a big difference, exactly, because the particles that make up each water are very different, especially tap water, you can imagine. And so we went through this exercise, and we started, using the intent with a different water to see how we're going to do this experiment. And I realized that when we were focusing our intent on tap water, for example, it was so polluted. I mean, it was like what she was saying.
Mm-hmm.
It was and we were trying to demonstrate pH, and it just was so much effort because we had to kind of clean up all these particles, you know, particulates and that are like clogging up the water, and so long story short, we ended up working with a little bit more purified version, reverse osmosis, and then spring water. But all this to say that to answer her question. Then I came back to the idea, well, can we clean up water and with intent? And it's the exact same process. I would say that it's easier and it's faster if you know what you want to clean up, because your intent can be that much more accurate and precise. Instead of looking at a polluted water and say, okay, I want to purify it, yes, but what nutrients do you want to keep? What nutrients do you not want to keep? And so if we know this water, for example, has a high level of arsenic or whatever, it's better to know what it's made of and focus on each component, and with your intent, zip it out, and it works because I've tried it before. Does that answer your question?
It's Trinity's question, and I think it did. I understood it. One of the experience I'm a little concerned about one of the experiences and the way it was conducted, because I felt like it could be contaminated. And you tell me if I observed it wrong. But toward the later part of the film, there's an experiment with little pieces of tin foil on some type of needle or something that holds them suspended. And then you put a glass dome or globe or something over it so it can't be influenced by air or anything. And the intention is to get that tin foil to move.
Yes.
And it did. However, my concern was I saw the gentleman leading that experiment tell everybody to put their hands on the glass. And I know that what happens when you do that is the air heats up And the hands are at the bottom of the glass. Therefore, the air at the bottom of the glass is going to heat up and it's going to rise. And that would make that tinfoil move. And I was a little concerned that those results might be contaminated.
You're actually absolutely correct. It is true that when you put your hands, you're raising the temperature inside the glass, and it's possible that it would affect it. I don't know if it would make it rotated the way it does, because if you observe very carefully, like when we're measuring the temperature as well in other experiments that we've done, even the temperature has to rise by several degrees for it to like make it move, you know what I mean? But even when it goes gradually, because it's going to heat up gradually, right? It's hard to make it behave the way it actually does. And the way it starts to behave is that it rotates in one, clockwise, and then it would stop for a while, and then it would rotate counterclockwise, and it would stop, and it would re-rotate. You know what I mean? Like, the behavior is not consistent with just temperature rising gradually within the glass. Having said that, we were actually doing it gradually, where, again, Rachel had never done this before. And so first we tried it without the glass, and, of course, the electromagnetism from your hand even could be affecting the piece of paper. Then it was with the glass, with the hands on the glass. Then eventually it was with the glass, with your hands away from the glass. So it was like a gradual thing. But in the film, we ended up editing specifically that piece, because the rotation was so great, just to kind of show that it was working. But then we moved on to, if you remember, in the film, then we moved on to a point where the hands weren't touching the glass.
Right.
And then we, of course, took it a step further, and we did it long distance.
Yeah, and I was a little concerned also. I mean, I can't imagine what your filming conditions were there. However, I imagine there were lights, and I imagine, there was heat being generated by the lights, whatever. I mean, I was just a little bit concerned about that. And I also remember as a kid, a quote-unquote magic trick that we used to do, one of these simple tricks where you'd put a dime on the top of a soda bottle, and you'd put your hands on the bottle, and you'd say you could make the dime dance without touching it. And the heat from your hand would heat up the air inside. It would try to escape, and therefore the dime would bounce around. Anyway, that's what I thought. It was the only one I had a problem with, and I wasn't sure. And it sounds like there was much more going on there than you could show in the film. Therefore, you had accounted for some of that.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I mean, what you said is correct. But I think we just edited the pieces that kind of made the story like it was more of a gradual thing. First we showed this, then the next one, then the next one. But but also I've been doing this also with other people. You start to notice the behavior of the piece of paper, like the, you know what I mean? Like, you can tell when it's air, like you just blew on it by accident or something, or when it's temperature versus it's starting to move on its own. Like I said, it's like the way it rotates, it's very strange. Then it would stop completely. Why would it stop and then start again, you know?
Right.
If there was heat or air, or, you know, temperature.
And you certainly impressed Mr. Corey Feldman in your documentary. That was fun.
Yeah.
That was fun to watch him be. You brought him to Ben Hansen. And of course, we all know Ben Hansen from Fact or Faked and other paranormal work he's done. And you had you impressed him. You could see him that he was quite impressed by what you did.
Do something fun with Corey, so Ben and I discussed like what can we do to basically demonstrate that basically information or waves were transferring voices or from point A to point, something like that, and so he mentioned this experiment that they had done in one of they've done many experiments themselves. So, Corey loved it. He had a blast, recording his voice on one of the tape recorders and then having it show up on another tape recorder that was not even plugged in. So, it was a lot of fun.
Just to explain to the audience, because we've talked about EVP on this program a lot, and in fact, my work in paranormal investigating and ghost hunting, we do a lot with EVP, which is just, electronic voice phenomena. It's inaudible at the time, but when you play back a recording, you hear voices that weren't there when you recorded. And Ben Hansen did an experiment that I'd never seen before in the documentary, where he demonstrates how certain energies can create this effect. Therefore, we have a better understanding that if a ghost, in fact, is leaving a vocal imprint on a recording, it can do so through the electromagnetic energy it emits.
Exactly. That's exactly what we demonstrated. Yeah,
it was fascinating. talk to me about the non-human part of this, because in part of the documentary, you talk about actually trees and plants being able to communicate because of the fabric of consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. And there are many studies, actually, books written on trees and plants emitting a frequency. And I can't remember the name of the book, but it's a fascinating book. And studying the different types of frequencies that the trees were emitting depending on what was going on. And they noticed that these frequencies were a whole language, like a whole vocabulary that the trees were using to communicate, like a storm was coming or distress or animals or things like that. And I find that fascinating because we know animals communicate because we kind of assume they're communicating because birds are making noise or dogs are making noise. So, but we don't think that plants are communicating. And so this was definitely studied and investigated and demonstrated. And this gives us even a bigger picture of what's happening. Like, we are communicating with, obviously, our voices, but our energy is also entangled. We are communicating telepathically. Animals are communicating at a distance without even being together. So the magnetic field, birds are communicating. So we know that. Or dolphins are communicating. And now, to add to this whole picture, now trees and plants are also communicating. I find that very beautiful. It kind of fills in the gap of everything, all aspects of life in, communication with each other. So that's what I wanted, the idea that I wanted to bring in the film as well.
Caroline, this might be a question certainly beyond my pay grade, maybe yours as well. I'm going to throw it out there and we can chat about it a little bit. And I'm hoping I can ask it in a way that it makes sense. But is this phenomena that we're talking about a result of spirituality? Does it come from something spiritual, or does it do the opposite? Does this phenomena we're talking about get mistaken for spirituality?
Well, it depends how you define spirituality. I feel like consciousness is, again, a substance or an essence that allows you to do things. It's the mechanics of life. That's how I see it. Spirituality is more of an attribute. It's your nature, your spiritual nature. So you can use your spiritual nature. You can be spiritual as you allow your consciousness to affect water this way or do this or that. You know what I mean? It's like, to me, spirituality is an attribute of consciousness.
All right, let me be more specific then.
Okay.
God. God.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Replace the word spirituality in my question with the word God. Does this phenomena come from God, or do we mistake this as God?
Yeah, again, it depends how you define God. But to me, again, yeah, it's like all that is. And consciousness is a substance. It's a form of energy that permeates God. God permeates it. And then as it manifests within your individuality, your individual personality, it then expresses itself positively or negatively, or however you want to express it. This is your free will and your intent. So, I mean, I don't know. Did that answer the question? I feel like God is a concept. It's a permeates all of existence, and so does consciousness.
What about love? Love was mentioned in the documentary as well. How does that play a role in what we're talking about?
Again, it's an attribute. I feel like love is a form of energy that allows you to focus your intent a certain way. It's an experience that, again, makes you want to do certain things or experience certain things. And so, but also, to me, it's an energy form which has a frequency, and that's how you affect all other frequencies. We, Tom Campbell and I, were talking about love being the instrument or the energy that lowers entropy, meaning when you focus on love, when you express love for yourself, for others, you are lowering chaos, you're lowering entropy, if you want to look at it from that perspective as well.
Caroline, we're out of time. This has been a fantastic discussion. Thank you for putting up with me. I kept you talking a lot. You didn't get much of a break there, but it was all fantastic information, and it's all directly from your film. I mean, you did a lot of work, and you can only present so much in a film. I know the work was far more extensive than even what you present, and that's a lot. So once again, let people know where they can find Superhuman, The Invisible Made Visible.
Yeah, very easy. Superhumanfilm.com. Very easy, superhumanfilm.com. They can go right now and order the film.
What's next on your plate? You must have another project getting ready or in the works.
Oh, yes. I have a few ideas. One of them is ETC. ITC, sorry. What am I saying? Yeah, transcommunication, right? With Ben Hansen is mm-hmm. possible. I'm just looking at a few concepts. I'm not really, it's not 100% sure yet, but I'm playing with a few ideas.
Well, please make sure you let us know when one of those projects is underway or near completion or wherever, whenever you think it's appropriate to talk about, because we'd love to have you back.
Well, your questions were awesome, my dear. Very, very interesting and profound. I really, really enjoyed it.
It's not difficult to come up with great questions when you've presented the ideas so well in the film, which you did. It not only did it answer a lot of questions for me, it actually made me ponder many others. So that's a beautiful thing about this documentary. It introduces you to these ideas. It explains a lot, but it also makes you start to ask even bigger questions. Make sure you've listened to the first segment of this interview on Beyond Reality Paranormal.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by J.V. Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal, or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y, at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.